This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Shall we begin?
Expecto Patronum!
Black GI, is it fair? Deserve more than the white Americans that sent you here. Nothing is more confused than to be ordered into a war to die without the faintest idea of what's going on. I dedicate this next record to the soul brothers of the 1st Infantry Divisions. Be safe.
Gentlemen, welcome back to Vietnam.
Hello, everyone. You are listening to Popcorn Culture. I'm Lee Chui Lin, along with Sharmila Ganesan and Arvind Yuvaraj. And today it is Wednesday, which means that we are going to review something new or new-ish. And the movie that we're talking about today is The Five Bloods, which was newly released, I think, just a month ago. It was supposed to have a bit of time in the cinemas, but we all know what happened there. So it is a Netflix film. It debuted there, and it is a Spike Lee joint.
Yes, it is. And I don't think he knew the climate that it was going to come out in, but it's also a really, really interesting time to watch something like The Five Bloods, given with the Black Lives Matter's protests that are going on in the US. So this is very much a... It's an African-American lens on the Vietnam War. Mm. It tells a story of this group of Vietnam War veterans who are going back to Vietnam to recover the remains of their fallen brother, yeah. Along with some treasure that they happen to have hidden back then. And that sort of unfurls this whole story of what it means to be African-American today, the sacrifices of the community for America, particularly in America's war efforts. And there's a lot going on. It's I found it really interesting to watch it now. Interesting, not necessarily the easiest watch.
Yeah, interesting is right, because this is not the first time Netflix has done something like this. When COVID-19 was at its like when it was starting to spread like worldwide, they released a documentary called Pandemic, and now as the BLM, the Black Lives Matter issue has sort of erupted, this movie came out on their platform. So it's not they've been doing this quite consistently. I'm not going to say it's done on purpose, but the timing's just been pretty accurate for them. But also, Lynn mentioned Spike Lee joint. I think this is the least Spike Lee joint I've ever seen. Like, if I didn't know it, if it was a Spike Lee film, I wouldn't have guessed. I would have named like maybe five other people first before saying, oh, this is a Spike Lee movie, because it feels nothing like his other movies.
Oh, that's interesting, because there were these little touches that for me felt very much Spike Lee. The sort of intercutting of the historical, historical clips, or even just how he would, I think there's a scene where something from the White House pops up and he captions it "Da White House" or something like that. They're just these little touches, but yeah, you're right. I think it's more subtle, and you could very much watch this with no frame of who Spike Lee was or what kinds of films he makes. And, you wouldn't need that background, I think.
Huh. Okay. So I think that the reason why it is kind of important to look at it through a Spike Lee lens is partly because of its themes, partly because it is so much to do with Black America and Black America throughout history and all the different ways in which people might have felt underrepresented or pushed, further and further to the margins. But the other side of it is because it's actually a very cine-literate movie. Now, whether or not it does anything with those cinematic allusions is quite another matter. But I think nowadays, when you make a war movie, and when you make a war movie that is particularly about the, well, depending on which side you are, the Vietnam War or the American War in Vietnam, You are going to have to pull on so many different references because there are so many greats that have come before. There are so many very specific tropes, visual as well as audio, that people associate with the time of the Vietnam War and with shooting the Vietnam War. And so I think Spike Lee makes use of that very, very heavily. There are so many references to Apocalypse Now, both in terms of how things are shot as well as specific songs that are used. And so I actually think that it's quite useful. You don't have to, I agree, but it's useful if you look at it through that particular lens also, because Spike Lee is someone who is known to love referencing and arguing with cinematic tropes in his own movies.
It's also the, I think the thing is that he references everything from Apocalypse Now to Rambo to Chuck Norris, to Malcolm X itself, which is his own movie. I think what ends up happening, though, is that you don't necessarily need to know him.
Yeah.
You just need to know film. Mm. You need to know how these films have typically been shot. Because even though we've been kind of calling it a war movie, once you're about halfway through, you realize it isn't really. You see very little of war. You see a lot of the context of war. You see a lot of the aftermaths of war. But it's not a war movie in the sense Saving Private Ryan was a war movie, because you don't actually see very much at all of what happened during the war.
So that's another thing. Like it, you know, you mentioned that it's supposed to be a war, is marketed as a war movie. And this is like typical for a lot of Spike Lee movies, where you have to get used to the pacing a bit. The first 20 minutes, you're not sure how he's going to pace the movie. Sometimes it's a bit too fast, or it's a bit too slow. It's like peaks and valleys sort of thing.
Yeah.
But for this, it started as what I thought was going to be a war movie, because that's what they alluded to. And then they flashback, and then the aspect ratio sort of changes. And then for lengthy periods of the movie, it's not anymore. And then they sort of forget about those aspect ratios. And then it pops up again somewhere in the third act. And then there's an all different aspect ratio. So I wasn't too sure what he was trying to do. And a lot of it also played a bit like a documentary with the stuff that keeps popping up. There were some visuals that I did not want to see or were not prepared to see, but I was forced to look at because he, and they were actual pictures from the war. So I wasn't too sure what he was trying to do. I know that he has a message, but I wish I had better context of how he wanted to give me that message instead of going in blind to this movie.
Right. Yeah, because it is I think it's best described maybe more truthfully as a mashup, right? This movie is a huge mashup of different things. So it has, like we've been talking about, those sort of documentary factual clips of your Muhammad Ali's, your Martin Luther King's, you know. But you also have the aspect ratio thing. What they specifically said was they were shooting in 69 and they wanted to shoot on film to reflect, I think, what it would have looked like back in the 60s. So then you have that, but it's also a sort of caper treasure hunt movie. Mm-hmm. It's also a movie about friendship. It's also a movie about men and aging, if you wanted to look at it that way.
It's a road comedy.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a lot. And I didn't mind it. I didn't mind the shifting of gears so often. I think the bigger challenge for me was actually what you just mentioned, Arvind, which is that it's a movie that is important, capital I. You know, like Spike Lee is clearly making an important movie. The problem is you're kind of not so sure what that important message is. There's a lot about oppression. There's a lot about, I think how racism and the trauma of racism and how that gets carried on and how it gets perpetuated. So there are these things, but the cleverness of the movie and the slightly indulgent tone of the movie, I think, takes away from it somewhat, not to the extent that I still don't think it's really, really worth watching. At least I thought it was. But I feel like how clever he was in putting it together takes away from the main thrust of what he's trying to say.
Also, another issue that I had with it was the violence. Not that I have an issue with violence in movies, but I think it was sort of weird when he used actual pictures and actual footage from the war. And then he sort of had his own version of violence in the movie where he used like puppetry and practical effects, and it looked sort of comical or cartoonish. So there was an imbalance. It's like you're showing me actual footage from things that actually happened. These are people that really died and really suffered, and there's a lot of blood and there's a lot of gore. But then somewhere towards the second half of the movie, there's a bit of a comical way of showing people die, you know, and the violence is sort of over the top. It's sort of Quentin Tarantino-ish, which didn't exactly sit well. I don't know why. It felt a bit like, why is this piece in here? Because suddenly it's a bit Goonies when it wasn't Goonies in the start. It was like a Spike Lee serious thing looking back at important with capital I issues. And I don't know why the puppetry and the practical effects had to show up and make it look sort of B-grade, cheap effects movie, which I think diluted whatever he was trying to do.
We're talking today about The Five Bloods, which is a new Spike Lee movie. It was released digitally on Netflix about a month ago now, a couple of weeks ago. And so we would like to know your thoughts. You know, have you seen it? Is it something you enjoy? Do you like Spike Lee as a whole? Do you like war movies as a whole? You can WhatsApp us, 018-789-8899. You can tweet us at BFM Radio. We're going to be right back on Popcorn Culture, BFM 89.9.
Because freedom matters. BFM 89.9.
Who was that guy?
That brother was the best soldier that ever lived.
Hey! I have no place to stay.
Hey! We bury it. They don't. We come back and collect.
The love has flown away.
Hey! We've been dying for this country from the very get.
Now the time has come. There are things to really.
We give this gold. People.
Hello everyone, this is Popcorn Culture with Lynn, Sharmila and Arvin. Today we are reviewing Spike Lee's The Five Bloods. And so we've talked a little bit about the story, we've talked a little bit about how we feel. I think broadly speaking, Arvin, you didn't like it much?
Not as much as I wanted to, or not as much that I thought that I would.
I'm on the fence. I quite liked it. I would definitely say watch it. I expected it to be more, though.
I thought it was really interesting, but I think that I think like is a strong word for it. I don't know if I would rewatch it ever. I don't hate the fact that I've seen it, but I certainly wouldn't be running out to rewatch it again. And I think that, you know, Arvin, you spoke earlier about how for you it was, you wish you had a bit more prep. I think for me it was, I liked going in blind because then I could just get carried along and I didn't mind the shifts in tone so much. Because the thing about the movie is that it just goes, you know, in every which direction all at once. Sometimes we've talked about the different genres that it addresses, but it also explores random side stories, you know, whether or not it's about why a black man would be supporting President Trump, whether or not it's about a GI who maybe has a daughter that he didn't know about.
Yeah.
You know, maybe it's about a man who acts like he's rich but actually is broke. And then along with that, they're also trying to talk about how the Vietnamese experienced the war. And I think that's a weak spot in the movie, actually. But because I didn't really have a strong idea of what to expect, I was okay being just carried along like a piece of flotsam all the way until the end of the movie. And it didn't bother me that much.
Mm. So I think part of the problem for me with the film was exactly that. In trying to do so many things, you end up only sort of latching on to maybe one or two characters at most. And everyone else, even the Five Bloods, you know, you're kind of only nominally attached to most of them. And they're like one or two strong sort of people whose stories resonate with you. And I think that's a problem because every one of these men have stories. Every one of them are a part of it. It's sold as an ensemble. It's sold
the name of the movie.
Yeah. Chadwick Boseman is great as the sort of the young leader of this group that they're going back to, you know, they're going back to recover his remains. I really like the fact that they don't have younger actors playing these men. So in the flashbacks, or whether you want to call them memories, they're played by the older versions of themselves. And that's really great. And I like watching this ensemble of like older gentlemen kind of playing both versions of themselves. But really, you only come away remembering Delroy Lindo and Clark Peters. The other guys, I wish they had more screen time. I mean, I didn't really care about the... I don't want to give too much away, but like this humanitarian mission group of people who take up quite a large amount of the movie, they could have been cut out and it wouldn't have changed anything.
So that's the thing. I don't think you can put Chadwick Boseman in a movie and not have him in as much of the movie. That's a problem because the other guys are like good actors and they are great and stuff. But when you introduce Chadwick Boseman in the start, and then you give him all this like prestige and he's like the reason the movie is even happening. And then he's not in the movie as much. You feel a void. And I felt a void. I'm like, you know, I want to know more about Stormy Norman and I want to know what happened to him. And, you know, they're not showing me enough and they're not showing me the memories of their past and, you know, the war. They're just going on talking and fighting and bickering. There's a lot of yelling, you know, and a lot of people trying to solve their own problems now, which is fine. But then don't show me Chadwick Boseman. It could have been played by someone, a lesser actor, who wouldn't have taken the spotlight away from all these other people because it's difficult to compare to someone like Chadwick Boseman.
Oh, I so disagree, though.
I'm on Lynn's page.
I think that the reason why they went with Chadwick Boseman is because at this point now, he's played so many iconic Black characters, right? I mean, of course, the one that comes to mind is Black Panther, Wakanda Forever, etc. But he's also played Thurgood Marshall. He's played James Brown. So he's kind of become almost a shorthand for someone like a Stormy Norman, for a hero. And so I didn't mind. And I thought that the way we look back to their time with Stormy Norman is so mythical, right? Mm. It's shot in this golden light. He's there preaching to them about, you know, the words of Malcolm X. And so I didn't mind it. I thought that he was used actually kind of appropriately. And if anything, when we're talking about the unevenness of the attention given, I actually thought that a lot of the oxygen was taken by Delroy Lindo, who puts in such a good performance. Like, it's such a powerful performance as this person who clearly has PTSD, who's clearly struggling through the after effects of the war. And it's really, really visceral. But then what about the other guys? So yes. Yeah, I see what you're saying.
Mm. No, I agree. I loved, and that's what I meant by, I think Chadwick Boseman is almost like their James Dean. He's like frozen in time. He's never going to age. He's always perfect. And that's fine. I would have loved to see more of the others. The others felt, other than Delroy Lindo, most of the other five, you know, the Bloods felt like caricatures. And, you know, so when you know, someone loses their life or whatever, you're supposed to care, but you don't because that person's never been given the screen time for you to care anyway.
One of the things that I loved about the movie was the music, the choice, the soundtrack and the choice of songs and stuff. So that's one thing that I genuinely like. Like, every time I felt a bit of a slump, like the Chadwick Boseman parts, like they would show a bit of him and then go back to the current times and I'd be like, you know, I'm not that interested in whatever's going on here. But then you'd have a soundtrack to back it up and I'd be okay with it. I'd be like, this is a really good choice of song. So that's one thing. But yeah, I'm still like super 50-50 on this movie. Mm.
I found that I needed to sit with it for a little while after watching it. So after seeing it, I mulled it over for a couple of days and I'm no closer to liking it. So I think that's where I'm at. I still find it an incredibly interesting watch. I think that if you enjoy movies about either the Vietnam War and you're okay with all the visual tropes that usually go into that, you know, being in the jungle, being back, that's, you know, one entry point for you. The other is to look at it as a treasure hunt movie and also all the things that you learn to expect with a treasure hunt film. Now, the important with a capital I part, I think, is where we keep returning to, because the question here is whether or not that was done effectively.
Mm. There are things it does that I think are very important. And I think it's worth talking about, especially in this point in time, for a person who is a Black American, to talk about those issues that just because someone's the victim of racism, it doesn't mean that they won't perpetuate it. That just because someone has systematically been othered by their country doesn't mean they won't also participate in that country's terrorizing of other nations, right? And I think that movie dances that line really well. You know, for instance, having that, you know, older character who is a MAGA fan who's like, Donald Trump, yeah. I think it works because that's reflective of the actual situation. But I think where the movie kind of loses it is taking that to say something. And maybe it says more to an American audience. Maybe I'm missing what they're trying to say, because this movie has got great reviews. Lots of people are saying it has a lot of important things to say. However, I don't see many reviews that are telling me what those important things are.
I think that's exactly it. I think it works for like an American audience. It works well within the US. But when it comes to facts about the Vietnam War or the American War, however you want to call it, for anyone who lives in other parts of the world, especially in Asia, people have been to Vietnam. If you've been to like a single Vietnam museum, you know about all the stuff that he's talking about in the movie. So it becomes very surface level stuff. It's not a huge, you know, like a big thing that he's blowing up. It's not big news to you. And so for me, I wish he had picked one thing to talk about. I wish he had you know, zoomed in or focused on a single issue instead of talking about multiple issues. Like you mentioned, the people with the landmines, LAMP. That's a big issue. That could have been a whole movie by itself, like a Hurt Locker style film. But it was just like shoehorned into this film. The Vietnam War was another thing, like a big issue, you know, the imbalance of it that was shoehorned into this. Gold, you know, smuggling of wealth. You know, why black people were forced to fight in a war that they shouldn't have been a part of, stuff like that, when they were a small percentage of the US population. That's another thing. So it was like way too many things. And the way the message was delivered was he was hitting you over the head with it, which is another thing that I didn't like. It was very sort of like, I'm going to bludgeon you with this message, whether you like it or not. And I don't know if I like that as much as I wanted to.
Ironically, I feel as if, Arvin, your review of The Five Bloods mimics the pace and structure of the movie itself. Like you're picking up steam towards the end.
And then it all just like comes to a head.
Yeah, that works. So we've been talking about Spike Lee's The Five Bloods. Have you watched it? Are you planning to watch it? And does it sound appealing to you, I think? You know, do you like it when movies kind of do a big mishmash of genres and throw it all together? You can let us know. You can WhatsApp 018-789-8899. You can also tweet us at BFM Radio. And if you would like to follow us on social media for updates, we are BFM Popcorn on both Twitter and Instagram. You've been listening today to Popcorn Culture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.